you've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Great to be back on Launch Street today. Can't wait to hear what you think of today's interview. Our guest today is an expert in innovation and incubation. More on that distinction soon. Before I go there, I have a solid to ask you, and I know I ask it all the time, but please do me a favor, write us a review on iTunes. More reviews equals more listens, and that equals more guests. And as I always say, writing a review for Inside Launch Street is actually selfish because it benefits you. So go be selfish. You have my permission. Okay, back to today's guest, Pam Maynard. She is the president of product and innovation at Avanade, which is an IT consulting, which was created actually as a joint venture between Accenture and Microsoft, which is interesting in itself, the leading digital innovator with 34,000 employees worldwide. Pam's primary focus is to ensure Avanade's clients are successful and secure on their digital journeys. She also keeps the company ahead of the curve of emerging technologies. Pam shares incredible insights on creating a culture of innovation through real tangible actions and processes. We also talk about what it takes to really stay ahead of the curve and not fall behind. Because let's face it, oftentimes, it's not even until we're behind that we realize what's happening. She's going to talk to us about how to stay on the other side. All right, it's go time. Pam, thank you so much for joining me today. I have a feeling this is going to be a lively conversation.
Thanks, Tamara. I expect it will too.
So let's start off with, I'd love to hear from your perspective, especially given your work in innovation. What's your favorite, kind of more on the personal side, innovative brand or business, and why?
That's a hard one for me. But I come back to something personal, as most people do when they're asked this sort of question. And you know, because I travel so much as part of my job, having the opportunity to discover and learn about new music is one of the key ways in which I relax. And so my brand will be Spotify. Could be Tidal as well. Could be Tidal when I'm sat in my lounge because of the quality of the sound I find from Tidal. But it's definitely music streaming, and I'd put Spotify there.
So that's interesting to me because it's more for you. This is the first time I've heard an answer kind of this way, although it makes sense. It's more about your usage of it than it is about something in particular that they do.
That's right. Yeah, it is. And for me, you know, I love to learn and experience new things. And so I just love the surprise, the element of surprise that I get from Spotify in particular.
Isn't it? It's so fascinating to me. I actually love Spotify. I use it all the time. But I'm interested by that because oftentimes the answers are more like, well, they do marketing differently or product differently. So I love the personal side of it. I want to get us all on the same page kind of before we dig into some of the kind of hows and whys. So let's do this. I did your intro, but start by telling us what Avanade does and why Microsoft and Accenture felt it was actually worth creating.
And so Avanade is a technology company. It's a global technology company, and is focused on delivering innovative digital solutions and cloud services to our clients across many industries. There are 36,000 of us globally across 24. Yeah, it's across 24 countries. It's probably one of the hidden secrets, I think, of the tech industry.
Thing like, how did I not know this?
You know, and it's all about helping our clients, you know, to bring the best thinking, if you like, to, or through a very, we pride ourselves on our collaborative culture that also honors diversity. And I'm certain that's a topic that we may come back to. And it's majority owned by Accenture. It is a joint venture that was set up by Accenture and Microsoft, but it's majority owned by Accenture and was set up and founded in 2000 by Accenture LLP. Why at that time, yeah, just to answer the second half of your question, why did Accenture and Microsoft found and create Avanade at that time? It was the dot-com boom. It was the opportunity to take advantage in the market of the disruption that was happening back then. And Microsoft could see that they needed scale. They needed scale more to help them to deliver the software solutions, you know, based on Microsoft technology across the different markets, and hence founding Avanade with Accenture to give them that scale across the markets.
I have a couple questions for you on what you said. The first one is, I know we're going to dig more into kind of what depth innovation is as well. Maybe it'll parlay to that. You said to provide innovative solutions to your customers. I think innovative solutions, that phrase gets used a lot. So I'm curious from your perspective, what that really means in terms of what you're delivering and how that helps you, you know, provide tremendous value and stand out relative to your competition.
Yeah, I think it starts with a number of different ingredients. It means approaching a client issue, a client challenge with open minds, the courage to challenge status quo, imagination, and bringing diverse thoughts and perspectives, and not just from an Avanade point of view, but as we work together with our clients. Right, so challenging our clients as well to bring open minds, imagination, disruption, you know, into the room. And, you know, an example of that would be, you know, the work that we did with Merck Manuals. So Merck is a large pharmaceutical company, a large global pharmaceutical company. And they're known for what's known as Merck Manuals, which is probably one of the most trusted medical journals available in many, many, many different languages, a very heavy, it was over 3,500 pages. So you can imagine, you know, keeping that thing updated, keeping it relevant, keeping it current was a massive exercise. So we worked with them to reimagine, you know, what that could look like. And to really think about that from the perspective of the user, you know, the doctors, the nurses, you know, how they might need to absorb, how they might need to discover the material, use the material, and to challenge them to think about it differently and to take the experience front and center. And so we helped to create that, you know, online, a digital journal, you know, leveraging cloud technologies, which meant it was, you know, available much more broadly, was faster to update, to keep current and keep relevant.
So if I hear you right, Pam, kind of what you're saying in that process, which I really love, is you start with the customer, the user, whoever that is in your world. And for you, that's in this case, is the nurses and doctors. And then you work your way backward to, let's call it the ideal or best solution. And then you figure out, well, what resources can we deploy? And the reason I highlight that for us on Launch Street is I think oftentimes we start the other way around. Well, what's our product or service? And then how do we connect it to the customer versus what I hear you saying, which is, and I've heard some other guests say recently too, which is start at the end and kind of work backwards almost. And that's how you get to be able to imagine new possibilities versus kind of starting from I would think it's a more myopic view of starting product first.
Yeah, which can be constraining.
Yeah.
Right, in terms of, you know, really thinking big and thinking disruptively.
Yeah. Well, you know, you mentioned kind of ingredients and innovation. What do you think makes great innovation?
So, you know, I think it's, you know, some of the, those are, you know, coming back to the point around the ingredients. I mean, the, you know, the open minds, you know, being able to think big, thinking disruptively, vision, very important as well. You know, where is it that you want to get to? And, you know, what is it, and what's the appetite as well in the organization, you know, to go big? You know, some organizations, maybe they don't want to go big. They want to be disruptive, don't feel they can. They want to take a more iterative approach. I think it's really about understanding the what and the how. I think as well, it's about, also sort of thinking about the culture within the organization. You know, how do you how do you harness the best of the culture to create great innovation, right? How do you unleash the culture, right, to create great innovation? I think that's important too.
I want to go back to what you said about appetite for innovation or disruption, and kind of there's a scale there of how you want to do it. And I wanted to ask you about that because I find, I'll give you an example. I was just meeting the other day with the C-suite of a large, they're a global company, and they play more in the food game. And what I often find happens and happened in this meeting is, you know, leadership will say we have to be innovative, we have to be disruptive. But if you really look at the appetite of the culture overall, it's fighting against that. And maybe even leadership themselves are saying one thing and doing another, and not necessarily by intention, but just by, you know, fear of risk and failure and all those things that come along. So you have a global perspective. So when you look at that, how do you really gauge the true appetite of the clients that you work with? And how do you figure out then what to do next?
So in terms of how do we really gauge the appetite of our clients and then figure out what to do next? So that's the two parts of your question, right?
Yeah.
And I absolutely understand what you say in terms of, you know, typically the C-suite wanting to really push forward on innovation, and then, you know, maybe the operating system within the organization preventing that from happening. So, you know, for me, it's one of the keys to that is having, I think, the courage as a leadership team to really create the space to innovate tomorrow, and understand that, you know, in creating the space, what might actually come out of the process. Maybe something that you don't take forward. You mentioned failure. Yeah. The fact that, you know, you may fail, you know, the investment may not drive the return that you want first time round. You may need to iterate. You may need to adjust. And I think one of the ways in which you can gauge, or we can gauge, you know, our clients' appetite is actually to see their willingness to create the space, to step back, to have the courage to, you know, allow that innovation to happen and thrive in their organization and not let the operating system get in the way.
Right? That's a great way to say that you're battling tradition and systems that are set up to do what you did in the past.
That's right. Yeah.
One of the things that you talk about that I really appreciate is, you know, you kind of look at your job is to keep the company ahead of the curve. So how do you think about that and make sure that you're not falling behind? Because I think that especially in the innovation space, from my perspective, oftentimes, you know, when I hear from people, it's because they've already fallen behind. And we have this conversation about, hey, we got to get ahead and we got to stay ahead. That's the key, yeah, to staying ahead. Because even the leaders in industries fall behind. They fall into the trap too. So how do you think about that, and how do you make sure it happens?
Yeah. And one of the things that I did quite early on in my role is, you know, I sort of stepped back and thought about, okay, I'm responsible for the what in terms of what we take to market in terms of our product, right? Which is our services. We're a service company.
Right.
They are our product. You know, how do I actually ensure that product is relevant, right? I need an input, right? I need inputs. I need to take signals from the market. And so I created an emerging tech function, right, which will scan the market for me, right? Because the thing with tech as well is it moves so fast.
So fast, yeah.
So fast. And so I've created a small emerging tech function. It's not huge, you know, but it's a small team. And they go out into the market. You know, we're based in Seattle, so we've got the beauty of the West Coast. And, you know, so they research, they meet with up and coming tech companies, they experiment with new technology. You know, I also have, me personally, you know, I have a regular one-to-one with our head of emerging tech, and it's almost a reverse mentoring relationship. Well, it is a reverse mentoring relationship. Right. And I think this is a really important point for us as senior leaders to think about how we can work with people who are probably more in touch, with something like, you know, the emerging world of technology and can bring that insight to us quickly and use those relationships to become more informed and make the decisions. So just one of the things was emerging tech for me. I've also got relationships with analysts. You know, I've seen our clients participate in focus groups or industry user groups to stay ahead, understand what's going on in their particular sector, to learn from one another. And then the other thing for us is our partners. All right. You know, yes, we're co-founded between Accenture and Microsoft in terms of our JV parents. But, you know, Microsoft's all about ecosystems. So other technology partners that we deliver with to our clients, they can also help us to understand. So I think, you know, I'd encourage is thinking about those different avenues, you know, clients, partners, and also the wonderful source that you have within your organization to learn from.
I would just challenge all of us on Lawn Street to listen to what Pam's saying and actually, like, I can envision right now just a little bit of a mind map of who can I tap into in my ecosystem and maybe even on the edge of my ecosystem to keep me thinking forward versus backwards. Because I think oftentimes those great kind of connections happen when I'm talking to someone who's just barely touches what I do.
Yeah.
I mean, I have the benefit of interviewing people like you all day long. So I am just constantly absorbing stuff. That's what I do for a living, which is I like feed my soul. But I really appreciate what you're saying. I think we all get too down in the weeds. And we forget to look up and kind of have that. But what I appreciate mostly about what you're saying is it's part of your job, not just something that you haphazardly do when you have a chance. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what we need all to do, like make it part of our job description. I want to go off on a little bit of a tangent and ask you a global question for a second before I kind of pull it back in, because it's just kind of been percolating in my head as you've been talking. One of the, I think, incredible benefits and vantage points that you have in your role and given what you do and your scale is you are working with clients globally. And I would love to hear from your perspective in the business world today, what it takes to think with a more innovative approach, or even I guess act with a more innovative approach and mindset, just from a kind of global perspective, because you're seeing everything that's happening, which is why you need emerging technology people, because that's a lot to take in.
What do I see globally? I think, you know, I mean, I see a lot of what we've been touching on already in terms of, you know, people. I see there's definitely more of a hunger to learn, be more inquisitive. I think, you know, your point around getting heads up. I see a lot more of that. What I'm seeing as well is more of a trend towards really understanding the sort of experience that needs to be created in order to engage, retain, delight customers. But not only that, the other side is employees as well. Yeah. Because the talent war, you know, as organizations move into taking advantage of digital technology, digital disruption, that talent war isn't just happening in, you know, the tech world, it's happening everywhere. And so and across all sectors as well. So I'm seeing, you know, in the past, in terms of my world, technology, there was a heavy focus on operational systems, back office systems, driving process efficiency and effectiveness. What I'm actually seeing now is, as I say, that pivot much more towards the front end of businesses, the experience that, you know, products and services are creating. And I say not just for customer, but also internally for employees.
So So I'm so glad you mentioned employees and the war on talent, because I couldn't agree more. And oftentimes when I'm in technology, because so oftentimes when I keynote, what people often say to me after is, or before is, I'm really struggling because technology can do a lot of my job. Like, where do I fit in given all this? And then on top of that, right, to your point, there's this incredible war on talent of actually getting and retaining people. So I want to dig into that a little bit, because I think it's really important to have a culture that's thriving, and hence a business and a bottom line that's thriving, is you've got to really take care of your people. And I think that's really kind of come to light recently in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years. But how do you think about creating that culture I'm maybe paraphrasing here the way you said it, because you said it beautifully, but about kind of how did you say it about attracting, retaining, engaging? I might have flipped. How do you think about that?
So, I mean, from an Avanade perspective, you know, it starts with our values, right? I know that's often overused, right? Oh, yes, you know, value, vision, values, operating system. But I really, really do believe that. I really do believe that. And more important, it's not just having those values written down. It's actually living those values. It's living the values, right, in a way that is palpable, visible within the organization. And it starts with the leadership. As you know, I'm a member of the Avanade Executive, and you know, even in terms of how we operate as a leadership team, we have a set of norms which are built off of our values, and we will call each other out when we don't feel, you know, that every voice is being heard around the table, you know, or we really are, and that everybody does count, right? And so starting with us, making sure it's visible in terms of how we behave, and then taking that through our teams. But it actually starts with defining the values and absolutely living the values. You know, more recently, we've talked about how, and we've adjusted our way of working, if you like, in terms of, you know, looking to see how we can drive human impact in the work that we do, right? So with our customers, for their customers, you know, for their employees. We've also stood up our nonprofit division of our business. And one of the reasons that we've done that is because that having that sense of purpose now in terms of the societal impact of what we do is becoming much, much more important in terms of attracting and retaining employees and allowing employees to feel that they've got a sense of purpose in the work that they do. Right.
Can you give me a tangible example of one of those values? I don't want to obviously throw anyone under the bus or put them on a pedestal, but just an example of kind of how that happens.
Yeah. So one of our values is we believe everyone counts. Mm. That's it. We believe everybody counts. Everyone counts. And the way we bring that to life is through our diversity and inclusion agenda. We have on our scorecard, so very tangibly, you know, a measure of, you know, our diversity. How are we addressing and creating a more diverse workforce, a more diverse employee base. So fundamental, very tangible, very quantitative measure to make sure we are driving that in Avanade as a tech company. Whereas, you know, often tech companies are heavily male oriented.
Yes.
And so, you know, having a very clear metric. And then in terms of the way in which we work, how we work, you know, then challenging ourselves to make sure as we look around the table, we're in team meetings, we're in meetings with clients, that we really are bringing a diverse perspective into the room, right? And we are, you know, because it's been such a fundamental how in terms of how we've worked, in terms of bringing that value to life, we're actually seeing the sea change within the organization. And it started very much with gender. But it's now moving on. LGBTQ, veterans, you know, and Yeah, and we're seeing the change tomorrow. So, yeah.
So I believe very strongly that diversity in thinking equals better collaboration, better ideas, better solutions, better business overall, and that we, not just from a humanity perspective, but also from a, not just, humanity is not a just, but from that perspective and from the business perspective, it's highly valuable. I'd love to hear your view on that, on why you think, you know, diversity is A, so important, and B, kind of how it's really actually impacted the business.
There are many studies out there. Right? McKinsey did a famous one as well, which talked about the impact, the more diverse organizations and the impact on bottom line, right, from their research. More diverse, they managed to prove the connection between that and profitability, right? And which is accepted. I think, you know, going back to our topic today around innovation, you know, one of the key aspects to innovation, and, you know, we talk about imagination, being disruptive. I don't believe you can actually get there unless you can have diversity in the team that's, you know, reimagining, rethinking, ideating around that problem, right? So for me, actually being able to achieve innovation, and be successful as an innovative organization requires diversity. Fundamentally, diversity is critical to achieving that. Some of the work that we did for the Open University of Australia, and helping them to becoming much more effective in terms of the number of admissions and their reach in terms of students. And we actually brought students into the room to help to reimagine how that should work, right? How the enrollment process should work, etc. Which, you know, diversity of thought in the room around the table to reimagine and rethink the problem, right? The answer to the problem.
That's so cool. And I like what you said about diversity being on so many layers, right? Veterans, young, you know, generational, gender, et cetera, because there's so many ways, I think, to cut that pie So many different powerful perspectives to bring in. And I have found in our work that if you set people up to recognize that, hey, this is a diverse group of people, we all come from different perspectives, to take a moment to level set that a little bit, then they actually do respect each other and do collaborate really well. And I think oftentimes where diverse teams run into challenges is because they're not used to it, right? They're used to birds of a feather, but, you know, you and I both know those solutions and ideas tend to go nowhere. You can't reimagine with everybody coming from the same perspective, looking in the same box, right? Yeah. With the same information. But you got to kind of give people a little bit of a training around, hey, and we're going to do this a little bit differently, and it's powerful, but let me help you get started down this path.
That's right.
Being able to innovate in real collaboration, as you talk about often, is so important. What do you think stops people from innovating? If you look across your company and your clients, what's the brick walls that keep them from doing it?
So, I think about my own experience. So in my career, you know, I've been an operational leader. I ran the UK business for Avanade. I then went on to run Europe for Avanade. So operational, very focused on delivering the P&L, right? The P&L, the profitability of the business, yes. The quarterly results,
especially bottom line, and that's it.
Exactly. Yeah. The role I'm in now is a more strategic role. I don't have, and I'm going to use the word shackle, right? I don't have the shackles of the P&L as such, right? Obviously, I'm part of the executive team, so I'm very focused on our bottom line results and our growth. But my role is very growth oriented, right? It is about driving growth. And the operational leaders focus on the day in, day out, you know, execution of the business. What that has done is created space, right? So that's created space for me to think and for my team to think forward and be out in front of the organization around where we need to get to. And so one of the things that I think, you know, does prevent people from being innovative or prevents innovation is when you try and lock it into the operational side, right? Or try and do it as part of operational execution. You know, so my belief is that you need to create a separate, some way of separating some sort of space between your innovative function and your operational functions, right? And I've come to that conclusion through my experience over the last 18 months in my new role and having moved out of operation into much more of this strategic innovative role. Space is critical.
When we have it in the operations role, what happens? Is it just so constrained that you can't ever get to those new, even incremental innovation changes? Is that why?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, and going back to our conversation that earlier in our conversation, we were talking about operating system, the operating system getting in the way. You know, the day-to-day kind of constraints of, you know, having to do what you need to do to deliver the bottom line, it constrains the thinking. You have to work within, I think, a narrower guide rail, narrower guidelines, narrower you know, that need to be very focused on results all the time. I think if you step back, I think what it allow you to do is more latitude to not only succeed but also fail and learn from failure, right? Than, you know, if it's built into the operational side. Yeah.
So you mentioned failure, and we're actually talking about it a little bit before. How do you set up an approach that allows you to fail without massive ramifications? And maybe that's not the right way to ask it, but, you know, I think failure is one of the things that we all say we want to love, but we don't. And companies are often not set up for big failures, nor should they be. So we got to find ways to kind of build a culture of experimentation or kind of play in a space that allows us to fail and have it not have impact on the core. So how do you do that?
So one of the things we have is the concept of incubation, which helps with that. And, you know, we'll create an incubator. So, for example, this year we've been incubating Internet of Things technology, IoT. And, you know, going into that, you know, we put some resource into it in terms of headcount, a small team. We ask them to create a business case. So, you know, what do they think is the art of the possible in terms of, you know, the potential, the market potential from IoT, and what impact could that have on our organization and across which geographies, and to come up with a plan as well. And then we put some governance around what they're doing. So, you know, we'll have an exec sponsor, so somebody from the main business who is connected to that incubator. And why I've done that is because ultimately you want things to come out of incubation successfully and land in the business and then continue to grow and thrive in a sustainable way. And for us, that means, you know, we start to generate revenue and profitability. So it has to land with an operational leader, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we have that as well. So, and then we have the governance, you know, I'm involved, that business leader's involved, and we checkpoint in with the incubation team. You know, how's it going? Are we on plan? Are we not on plan? What might you need to do differently? And so I think, you know, having some idea of the vision around what you want, what the outcome could be from something like an incubator, you know, agreeing the resource, having some governance around it and checking in, you know, to make sure that you're helping that incubator to be successful, or potentially agreeing that you're going to switch it off and divert investment elsewhere. You've tried, it's not working, maybe that opportunity is not there. Again, the governance can be used to, you know, help those teams to make those decisions quickly and not be worried about making them. Right. So, that's just a few things.
No, just a few. That was fantastic. And I'm just sitting here smiling and nodding, because what you said in the beginning about having an executive sponsor, I think really important advice for all of us on Launch Street trying to kind of experiment with innovation so that we can take it to the next level, get buy-in for it. But one of the things that I see oftentimes that we work our clients through is they tend to go off and do the innovation, and then they come back to the person who ultimately has to run it or be a part of it in some way. And it's this one-way tennis match because nobody wants more work, right? It's a duck and weave. And because they weren't involved with it in the beginning. So I think two things happen that you're really overcoming with how you do it. One is there's no buy-in because they weren't involved from the beginning. So they're annoyed, right? Now you want me to take on this new thing. The second thing is the idea itself, whether it's a product or service, is actually not fully thought through because it was missing the operational perspective from the beginning.
Yeah, that's right. And this is key to me as well. And again, you know, we've been on this journey, Tamara, right? I mean, yeah. I've learned this lesson because I observed from my operational role how successful these incubators were. And what you've just said is something that's really important is as the incubator scales, so it hits key milestones, you're sort of seeing some positive results. Okay, let's take this to the next level. You know, some of the milestones are about, as I say, the connection with our geographies, our regional teams.
Right.
You need to make sure as well that from our perspective, we're not just scaling technical capability, but we're actually scaling the support capability that goes around that, right? So our learning and development or our legal function or our selling function needs to understand, you know, what this thing's all about and how we may need to take it to market differently. Therefore, our marketing function needs to get ready. And so you have to bring in those different capabilities as part of your incubation thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe, I feel like I need to have you back because I want to ask even more about your incubation program and how it works. Although I think the advice you gave was tremendous about having that connection to operations and also forcing them to build a case study and saying, let's like show the proof in this, justify this. I part of the reason I watch Shark Tank isn't because it's not just because they're entrepreneurs and it's fun, but because I want to hear the questions they ask, because it helps me think about how do I bulletproof my thinking and my business as I grow. And I know Shark Tank sounds like an odd tangent, but it's like those things that you pull in that you go, okay, I've got to prove, how would I answer that question if I was asked that? And how do I prove that? And I think for all of us trying to innovate, that is so important to really think about, not just like how brilliant you think your idea is, but the case study behind it. And we miss that often. Before we get going, where would you like people to go to learn more and connect?
So you can find me on LinkedIn and you can find me on Twitter. My handle is Pam Ava, AVAGM. That's me on Twitter. And
awesome. We will put the link in the show notes for that. Pam, this has been fabulous. I got one last question for you. What's your final piece of advice for people like me and all of us out there trying to stay ahead of that curve?
Stay
ahead. I mean, it's such a big curve sometimes.
My final piece of advice is to take the opportunity to make the time to continuously learn. Mm-hmm. Right. That would be my part. Make the time to continuously learn and think about those sources of learning that are available to you. Yeah.
And there's so many.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, the reverse mentoring, maybe there's a partnership, there are so many. And there are often ones that are right in front of you. You didn't even realize you could take advantage of. So
That's right. That was great advice. And to what you said earlier about it, actually make it a part of your agenda versus a nice to have when you have time. Pam, this has been fantastic. Thank you for your insights around kind of what you do. I think both at the global scale, but also at the granular scale, I think there's a lot of really tangible elements that all of us can take away from this conversation. So thank you.
Thank you, Tamara.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, LaunchStreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.